accidentally conducting, you know, infinite size, infinitely conducting ground plane. It has all kinds of peaks and valleys, so you get reflections all over the place. But in a theoretical world, we're mounting a dipole over an infinite conducting ground plane. You can do a mathematical analysis of the reflections and those angles where the and dimensions, the heights, the angles, all add up to a 360-degree phase delay of the reflection will give you peak performance at that angle. But again, these are very broad curves. And let me just throw a little editorializing here. As long as you have a halfway decent antenna putting energy out into space, yours are pretty good dual mate contacts.
Yes, I agree with you, Ed. And you're correct that in outer space, where, you know, every so often someone says, well, where's the ground in outer space? There is no ground in outer space. Anyway, there's this, that lovely donut shape. But I have actually gone into the antenna simulation software and built a center-fed dipole, and you don't get a complete 360-degree donut. You get about a 180-degree donut at a half of a wavelength above a standard average type of ground. And if you change that up or down, that kind of half a donut just goes to hell. So that's what I was alluding to. The total donut is outer space, but the half of a donut actually can be demonstrated in simulation software. Whether that's really what's going on exactly, I don't know. But in simulation software, you'll get that half of a donut at a half wavelength of elevation above ground.
Roy, what's the approximate takeoff angle of a beam antenna?
Depends on the environment. It goes straight to the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all these things are variable. If you have different types of antennas, they might respond slightly different to their environment. They'll give you a calculated in open space on a simulation software, but in the environment, they change depending upon their environment. So you can't really, you know, I can't tell you it's 30 degrees. Because, you know, you could probably draw it in free space and measure it, and it might come out 30 degrees. But if you put it in place as a practical antenna, it can be 20 degrees. It could be 50 degrees. It, again, as Ed has mentioned, it's highly dependent upon the environment in addition to its design parameters.
Let me be perfectly clear. It's not highly dependent. It is 100.0% dependent. A Yagi antenna in free space will radiate along the line of the boom. It depends on what the surrounding grounds and hills and mountains and buildings do.
Okay, Ed, I think this is a case of potato, potato.
Probably.
201.
Yes, David?
Is this analysis a universal analysis for all antennas and all devices, or just the ham radio?
No, not just ham radio.
Yeah, we're talking about the underlying physics of all radiating antennas. For the most part, when we talk about antennas here, we are talking about standing wave antennas. There are other designs for antennas. There are traveling wave antennas, which some people like to use primarily as a receiving antenna for very low frequencies. And recently, a month or two or three or four ago, we talked about Los Alamos is working on a rather intriguing new design that works in no way like any of the antennas that we deal with.
QSL, it sounds very interesting.
I guess the answer,
you know,
is,
but you have
complex,
an 80-foot tower with 16 antennas, four stacked over four,
moon-bound,
wondering how much of that signal would get to the moon.
I guess
And the other question I have is, every single cell phone has an antenna in it,
has the lowest,
especially the one that I bought and then the other ones that I've used. You know, the antennas inside and how they work.
The long wire has the most straight up angle of launching the little bits of energy that we try to put in the air. So I guess the explanation is in highly complicated physics.
Fortunately, yes. But interesting nevertheless. And again, there are some designs that favor higher or lower takeoff angles. Again, if you know what you're doing, there are ways of picking a model, picking the environment for the model. As I mentioned earlier, if you take a center-fed dipole and mount it too low to the ground, you're going to get a lot of loss because of ground coupling, but you'll get a lot of reflections that will end up with a near-vertical incident sky wave. And if that's what you were looking for, then that's what you do. By the way, Rich, unfortunately, and David, both of you were doubling with each other. I was able to basically kind of decouple the two conversations, hopefully. But if either of you wants to repeat yourself without that kind of complication, please feel free.
KG2RY. Hold on a second. Yeah, I just wanted to see if we were doubling again. No, I was talking about an antenna that's on an 80-foot tower, four stacked over four for moon bounce, and how much of that signal gets to the moon. And then the other question is antennas in cell phones, and every cell phone has an antenna.
Wait a minute. There's 15 questions in there. Do you want a path loss analysis?
Well, David, do you want to answer that?
He said something about analysis. I didn't get everything there.
With moon bounce, you're talking about a classic path loss analysis. Should I go on or quit while I'm ahead?
Well, the energy is directed in one direction, and it tried to pinpoint, an exact destination. And beyond that, I don't know, but I saw one, and it was quite awesome. This is back in the 70s.
Boy, should I?
Yeah, it's just 1 minute. I just want to put my 2 cents in, and you can go off. If you have a 4x4 array, you basically have 16 times the transmitted signal, hopefully reaching the area of interest. So that's roughly a 12 decibel gain in power localized to the region that you're trying to get your signal out. Ed, your turn.
All right, classic path loss analysis. Step one, need to know your transmitter radiated power. Item number two, you need to know penny gain over an isotropic radiator of your antenna array, no matter how it's built. What is the DBI gain? Now you have the transmitted power and the DBI gain, which is your effective incident radiated power. Now you do a path loss. It is a square law degradation with distance. So you now take your power with that gain, and now you reduce it by square law for 239,000 miles from what typical range of the moon, and whatever you want. Now we have a problem. The moon is not a homogeneous surface. And I'm assuming your antenna is definitely larger, covering a larger pattern than the surface of the moon. So what you're doing is you're averaging all of the reflections of different surfaces of the moon, which is almost impossible to calculate. And keep in mind, you have stuff reflecting at different angles depending on, the meteor craters and mountains and ridges. So it's very complex. And then you have whatever percentage of your, you basically have to estimate a reflection coefficient. And let's say your reflection coefficient is 10%, probably much lower, probably 1%. And by the way, don't forget the Doppler shift. Everything's moving. But that has nothing to do with the loop analysis, you know, the range analysis, test analysis. Now, you do square law coming back. Now you need to know the capture area of your array. In other words, what's the equivalent parabolic dish? So that any signal in that area goes to you, is received. Because now what you're doing is you have a huge pattern of the reflection off the moon where you have to estimate the beam width, and you have to figure out what percentage or what fraction of that is received by your receiving area, and then you need to know the noise figure. There's a lot of very hard to calculate variables there.
QSL, thank you very much. Yeah, I remember Lasuni, you know, he was operating his moon bounce radio, and the CW that he got was kind of moving up and down, up and down, up and down. You know, it wasn't very stable. And I guess that's about as good as you could get back at that time. But you know, I think about antennas, and I think about the antenna inside my little cell phone, you know, and nobody really thinks that there is any kind of communication with the cell phone, only, how to say, you know, it's sort of like two cans with a string in between.
It depends who you're talking to. If you're talking to anyone hopefully here, they're not thinking that way. They're all radio devices. They all have antennas. In the very, very early days, they were stuck out as little whips. But as time has moved on, they've been able to miniaturize them and put them on the little sides of the cases in areas that aren't covered with metal so they radiate and receive signals. So hopefully most of the people sitting around listening tonight know that their cell phones are radios and have antennas embedded in them.
So there is, if you can use a cell phone like you would use a ham radio, in terms of like what you talk about, what you protocol, whatever, you know, politeness and all, and you know, I find that maybe this is a little bit easier than going out into the streets with a dual band HT. There isn't so much activity here anymore.
Okay, well, it depends. It's a different thing entirely. It's microwaves that are digitally encoded, that have local cell towers to act as relays. You know, if we had repeaters that linked to each other, you know, half a mile apart, scattered across the country, then, you know, theoretically you would have the same type of propagation using our radios, our ham radios. But there's no trillion-dollar infrastructure to build anything as large as that. So it's a different type of situation, but they're still electromagnetic waves. They tend to be more microwave than HF or UHF or VHF, but they're still electromagnetic energy.
QSO. And they were talking about phone networks, cell phone networks with internet data enabled by low-orbiting satellites for average telecommunication.
Yeah, we talked about that a while ago, but keep in mind that's something that Elon mentioned. So we have to keep, you know, Elon mentioned that you'd be able to use your Tesla car as a taxi service and make $30,000 a year from it circa 4 years ago. And anyone crazy enough to put it on autopilot is either going to kill someone or kill themselves. So take that to whatever bank you want to take it to. It's a nice idea. I think it's going to require an enormous infrastructure that good old Elon can't even afford. So I think that's another pipe dream, like the Hyperloop and the Neuralink and his artificial intelligence and his robots and a lot of other things.
QSL. And, you know, I'm really happy with 4G LTE, if you know what I mean.
Got to work for different things. 5G, I never quite understood 5G. The concept for 5G is to have an enormous bandwidth. So theoretically, and I still don't know why, if you wanted to see a high-resolution video on your cell phone, there's enough bandwidth to cover that. So unless there's some other high-bandwidth technology that they haven't mentioned yet, I'm not quite sure the benefit, but they'll do it nevertheless. One of the options I think they were promoting was that would be your internet service provider. So instead of buying into Fios or Cablevision or whatever it's called this week, you just kind of put your cell phone into a little dock, and it would supply your entire house with all the internet service provider functions. I think that was the plan, but I don't know how that's going for them.
WB2EV.
Yes, Ed.
I mentioned this on the net, just in any event. I attended a professional presentation about 5G recently, and the real high bandwidth stuff is up to about 20, 30, 40 gigahertz. You'll ask, what purpose is that? It won't go through anything. And then we were all blown away when the fellow presenting said, you're missing the point. Imagine the Super Bowl. 100,000 people, like, you know, when, they didn't stop any action on the field. 100,000 people all start checking their cell phones simultaneously. And that will overload any network unless you have an incredibly broadband network with basically multiple cell towers around the stadium. So the idea being, if you have enough bandwidth to handle 100,000 people simultaneously coming on, and the beauty is the signals aren't going through anything but about 100, 200 feet of air. And that's what all that nonsense is really designed for. Otherwise, it's a fairly straightforward update, but otherwise, you know, no shock change.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned that before, and I'll repeat what I think I said before, is I don't know if that's cost-effective. I mean, you know, there's one Super Bowl a year, so you're rolling out $500 billion of infrastructure, building it all over the place. I mean, if that would be the case, then you just need to build that infrastructure around large stadiums or such. And I never read any place where they suggested that was what they were going to do. They were just going to slowly build it up in concentration in high population areas. And the poor guys out in the sticks are stuck the way they always are. So I don't know. I mean, it makes sense, sort of. But then when you factor in the expense of all of this, just so a couple of 100,000 guys who want to go to a Super Bowl can have a chat. I don't know. I don't know if you take it down to the nuts and bolts of how much it costs you and what you get for it, whether that kind of balances the bookkeeping book.
Yeah, but here's the question: it's not literally just the Super Bowl; it's everything in a large outdoor stadium, even an indoor stadium, because. But the signals don't have to pass through anything substantial. Your thought about internet service, once you mount it indoors in your house, even the wood side of the house is going to block. Now, here's the point. The point is the bandwidth. In order to get the high bandwidth, you have to raise the frequency, and the attenuation through everything goes way up. So the idea being, if you want to put really high bandwidth to your house through the wood or even more RF-blocked walls, you have to go low enough for treatment to you, and you're just not going to get all these wonderful bandwidths so that everybody can have all the bandwidth they want. You got to go way up where you can only really go through air. Now, just have to separate, you know, the hype from it. You know, everybody's busy, you know, exaggerating. So there's a large element to that.
Okay, but I mean, there's still, I mean, if you take a map and you could mark it where there are big stadiums. There aren't that many stadiums in the country, are there? I mean, you know, I mean, large capacity stadiums. Maybe 200-300? So for 200-300, you're building an infrastructure for an entire populated country? So, again, it makes sense, you know, because obviously the loss, the path loss is going to be much smaller without anything, any building or something. But the way they presented it, if memory serves, is that they were just going to build out a massive number of high concentration of 5G cell towers. You know, like eventually their dream come true is to have a cell tower every block. And if you throw enough electromagnetic waves close enough, even though you're going to have a significant real path loss, it'll suffice to get to the inside of your house. At least that's the way I think they were selling it at the time. I mean, maybe that was just a con on their part. I don't know.
Now you get into the different types of home constructions. Also, in urban areas, the stuff is much more RF resistant than, say, a, you know, suburban wood house.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, I think it was 4G. 4G had a vaguely similar problem in that 4G was using somewhat higher frequencies with somewhat greater real path loss, and they had not had an opportunity yet to build out the infrastructure of cell towers to get them as densely populated as needed. And companies, providers, were selling people boosters for their house, where you'd plug the booster into your internet service provider, and it would act as a kind of relay station to talk to the cell tower that was too far away because they were using too high frequencies, until they built out the infrastructure, and then they stopped to giving any discount for those hotspots or relays or whatever they were designated.
I don't know. I can only tell you what I heard. I only know what I read in the paper.
Okay, I understand that. Again, I didn't dream that. I mean, you do remember when 4G was just being rolled out, and they were discounting repeaters for people who had problems accessing their cell towers inside their houses and buildings of different you know, business and such?
Yeah, I also remember Zoom calls in the Edsel.
I talked to the woman at Verizon. She told me that it'll be up for probably about 10 more years.
What will be up for 10 more years? 5G? I mean, inevitably they'll have something that they'll call 6G, and there'll be people who think that that's going to turn us all into zombies, and there'll be other nonsense, but I'm not quite sure what you're alluding to in 10 years.
4G LTE. 4G, long-term experiment, I think is what it's called. Long-term experiment. Yeah, 10 years. 4G will continue to be operational for another 10 years.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, it depends on the executive board. If they decide next Wednesday to kill it, then they'll kill it. But they probably won't, because it probably won't impact on their profits bad enough to upset people who are using the previous generation. So, yeah, it's very possible. It's sort of like what goes on with Microsoft and Windows, where they kind of give the date that they're going to discontinue publishing, repairs, you know, for different ways of attacking the operating system, and they usually tend to extend that many years thereafter, just because if you don't, it upsets the customer and you don't want to upset the customers because they're giving you the money.
KG2RY. The reason why they keep 4G LTE is because 5G, there isn't 100% coverage. So when there is no coverage in certain places, it falls back on 4G.
But you know, in a perfect world, they would love everything to be 5G, and they probably would like to shut down 4G. But, again, they won't, and it depends upon how much money they want to spend to get new 5G-capable cell towers up all over the place. You know, the infrastructure costs money, and they have to think of it in terms of their stock value and such. If they spend far too quickly, they could end up with financial problems. It could lower their stock value, and then everyone would be very upset there in telecommunications land. So, yeah, I think you're safe. At least for 10 years. 10 years sounds reasonable. But eventually this too shall fall, especially if someone starts to talk about 6G. Then, you know, who knows? Then there'll be 7G.
A-T-U-T-O.
W-S-2-N.
I like to talk, Roy.
Yeah. Paul? Yes?
Yeah, okay, Roy. Out by me, the you know, I go by the airport, MacArthur Airport. My phone definitely says 5G. And I don't know if it's just because my phone is 5G capable, or I'm actually tied into a 5G system. You know, it does show up as 5G when I'm, you know, standing there looking at the airplanes in MacArthur.
Yes.
Yes, you're doubling with someone else. I don't make out the call sign.
KA2UTF.
Yes, what would you like to say?
Aren't there like two varieties of 5G? One is 2 millimeter wave, and the other one is kind of an ersatz level.
Yeah, I was going to mention that to Paul, that the fact that 5G lit up on his cell phone.
7330 version 3.7.1. That time complete. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Hello, 1-2-3.
W2VL repeater.
WB2ZF.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Ah, there we go. WB2ZS.
SCOM 7330 version 3.7.1.
WB2ZSC test. I wonder if
Charging now. Also, it probably stayed on until it went out. That would be your guess, right? Yeah, well, it was still beeping when I got there. It probably was just, it didn't have enough electric in it to generate AC. I mean, you know, it could last up to an hour or so under the load we have, maybe more.
Right. So, I guess, but now Billy's aware of what happened, if it's a matter of having someone take a look at the circuits?
No, I haven't given him a call yet. I had to do a few other things before I left the area. No, I'll give him a call in a little while. I'm going to see if I can find the cable for that UPS so that it will, you know, do a graceful shutdown, although I'm not 100% sure. Maybe we could also have it send out emails that it's on, or SMS text that it's on backup or something when that happens.
Oh, yeah, that would be helpful, because in terms of the scheme of things, it would mean that somebody just needs to go up there and look for an electrical situation, as opposed to the repeater itself going down.
Yeah, and there is a way to circumvent that, which, in retrospect, I just thought of. But, neither here nor there.
All right. Another thing to contend with.
Yes, it is. And this roadway is lousy, so I'm going to switch to the expressway.
Okay, so can't be sure you're coming home in the middle of traffic. Well, for you, that's kind of normal, you know.
Yeah, the difference is it's almost 4 o'clock and it's still sunny out.
Yeah, it was funny. We had the grandkids this weekend, and they're really good, considering they're coming to a different environment. They've been here quite a few times, but they both sleep in the same room. And they weren't fazed by daylight savings time. Not only didn't they get up when they should have gotten up, they got up an hour earlier, you know, instead of getting up at, they normally would get up at about 7 o'clock. So now with daylight savings time, would have been 8 o'clock, but no, they got up at 6 o'clock.
So they got a little backward, Dave.
Yeah, and it's funny how they messed their clock up, because the little one would have normally, let's say, gotten up at 7, taken a nap by 11, and she did catch up, though, when I think we put it in. Yeah, we weren't sure what to do. We did put her in at 11 daylight savings time, which was really 10, but then she slept for 3 hours once she caught up. So somehow or another, the baby's body figured out exactly what was going on.
Here you go. That built-in alarm clock.
Yes, indeed. What else? I do hear some wind out there now. I didn't hear it before.
Sorry about that. I was just taking a drink.
Yeah, no problem. Maybe you need to stop for a cup of coffee on the way home. This is K2K Andy.
Yeah, I think I've had plenty of coffee today so far. Anyway. No, I do have to make a few stops. One of them not far from you.
Sounds like a ShopRite visit.
Yep, there you go. You know, they built one up in town by me. You know, not too far away. But I still wind up by you.
Same ownership?
Yes, it is.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know a lot about it, but, I mean, Greenfield sold the business, right? But was he allowed to keep X number of franchises? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Hang on. Just had to get over to the left. Okay, here I am. Anyway, yeah, it took a few minutes for me to realize what was going on, because I started in one cabinet and moved my way, and worked my way over.
And where is the breaker? Is the breaker's in the wall, correct?
Yeah, it is. Circuit box there.
Well, again, it could have been some kind of a power surge. I don't know. You know, the wind and the rain. Who knows? Anyway, yeah, I do hear the wind. I don't see it moving the trees, though. But I can hear the wind going by. It's still cold out there. But again, it's like a cold dampness, which I always hate.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give Billy a call, and we'll talk to you in a bit.
All right, thanks, Steve. KTKND.
WB2Z, Hershey.
KTKND. You're on the reef side. I'm not sure what's interfering with the reef right now. And there's KETC, you are, but his signal's also on the low side, so a little hard to hear. KETC, you are, just to try again, but again, your signal's on the low side. Take it out, repeater.
Oh, I just turned the radio volume back up. I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, it seems to be hanging up as opposed to some malicious interference there.
Mention it to Lou. He was looking at something a little earlier that he thought might have been a problem with the All-Star node.
Yeah, George was trying to get in WB2IKC, and then there was another KETCUR, and when they were transmitting, it seemed like after they transmitted, the repeater was hung up.
Yeah, I'll give Lou a call if you want me to, but I think that was what was happening before. He tried resetting it. Seemed to be okay, but there may be something going on that, you would have to look at network-wise.
Yeah, you don't have to call me. I'm on the air, no choice.
Okay, we don't have to call him.
Yes, how convenient. But Lou, I don't know if you were listening, but it seemed like when George, WV2IKT, and the other station, I think KTCR, when they were transmitting, after they transmitted, it seemed like it hung up.
Hey, Lou, is there a sensitivity adjustment on that somewhat similar to a squelch?
No, the only time I reset it was when it first powered up. And the other thing I did was I manually reloaded the news line for tonight in case it was loading when it was down or trying to load, didn't get. but I thought it was just, you know, a weak signal. But let me turn on the thing because I can see when the COS is on and if it's coming in from another node or not. But it was all followed by the Glen Oaks courtesy tone. I did hear that, but maybe I'll know more. Let me bring this page up on my computer.
KTKB, no, the tone wasn't coming up. It was dead. And then 20 seconds later, 10 seconds later, didn't feed it back up.
Now, what I'm saying was I was monitoring Glen Oaks directly, and it was the Glen Oaks courtesy tone that always followed those two or three incidents that you're talking about. It led me to believe that there was some low RF coming in, and when they dropped, we heard the courtesy tone.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounded like to me. Maybe somebody else is, with a weak signal transmitting and, you know, doing that right after they're on or while they're on. I don't think it's an issue with the network, but I'll bring that window up and I'll know more.
So I talked to Steve and they have to respond to a phone call. Take it easy.
All righty. Coming in on Middle Island right now. Maybe those other stations can come back and try again. George, if you're still in there, give another shot and let's see if it's the same phenomenon.
I'll give it another shot. WDYKT. And, I noticed that earlier
me on another channel, maybe Plainview on 449, see if that's good.
No, that was perfect. Perfect. I think that's what it was, that whatever you're doing before was for marginal. No, this is fine.
Yeah, the Yeti down here is 50 watts. It's tough to get a better signal out of a mobile as far as I know, so hopefully it's better now.
100%.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, if Steve comes back, I'd love to find out what he found out about the repeater and why it went down.
You had a lot of signal on the input over here. 5107.
It wasn't. It wasn't visually
here. Were you using a different radio?
You know, sometimes. Really can't see that there's an issue with it, but he turned it off and on again, and he got the power back from the AC outlet. But he's not using that circuit anymore anyway. He decided, you know, he'll offload it to another outlet, another circuit, because perhaps that breaker is on its way out. And he's going to tell the landlord about it.
Steve, you doubled the flow. Pick it up, Steve.
Yeah, I already did.
You gonna replace that breaker?
Not my job, and it's working at the moment, and it, I mean, could be a number of things, I don't know what, but what I want to do is I want to get you, I want to get the software for, that does the shutdown on the UPS so that we can gracefully shut things off when it has another problem like that. And also so it can send out the either emails or texts letting us know it's on battery.
Okay. The issue that that Richie brought up about the noise, I think it was just George was coming in very low power apparently before, and it was marginal. And I think at points, at times, it was enough to open the PL, but virtually hear noise. So I don't see anything weird on the networking here, and it's, you know, it's not coming in from any of the nodes or anything.
Yeah. I am going to park the car. I will be back in a few minutes. WB2ZS.
Yeah, go ahead. This is WB5KT. Hopefully I'm all right. It's a repeater.
Yeah, George, it's Dave, your neighbor in Massapequa. I was listening to you on your input. It sounded like you have an intermittent connection with your antenna, probably from the wind blowing around. If you want to go to Simplex.
WB2IKT is back. Interesting, if I'm hearing the repeater absolutely full quiet, it sounds beautiful over here. How's my signal now?
NY2H, yeah, George, I hear you okay. I had to go back to Middle Island because I can't hit one of those anymore, so I don't know. Selden is screwing around. All right, he's off now. So somebody in Selden is throwing in the mix. I'm wondering if the if our repeater antennas are getting kicked around in winds. I don't know. But you sounded okay on that last one, George.
Okay, great. Because I heard M2APG pump in there for a moment. And, kind of told me that I had an intermittent signal, put it in my antenna, which I just checked, and it seems all right. And I'm hearing Glen Oaks just absolutely full quiet, if that were any problem. And if my antenna was in to make sure I hear crackling or something.
Do you have any kind of metering? Any power meter or WR meter on there?